On Friday, October 12, 1492, Christopher Columbus wrote in his journal, "At dawn we saw naked people. It was the day Columbus and his men walked upon a new world for the first time. They planted flags with crosses on a small island in the Bahamas. He gave the natives red hats and glass beads. These Indians," he wrote, "ought to make good and skilled servants. They can easily be made into Christians. Today, just as in the time of Columbus, Christian missionaries bearing gifts and promises of salvation venture into the last of these hidden outposts to try to save the lost souls of the jungle." In the first of the Vanishing Homelands documentaries, producers Sandy Tolan and Nancy Postero bring us the story of the Yuki Indians, 130 forest-dwelling nomads in central Bolivia, and the evangelical Christians who coaxed them out of the jungle.
The first time we saw the white people, we thought they were the spirits of our dead ancestors, of our grandparents. These spirits haunted us in the forest. We were afraid to come out.
Chief Ataiba remembers the morning he stood at the edge of the forest. Clutching his long bow and bleeder-tip arrows, he peered out through broad palm leaves into a clearing. Behind him stood his band of 23 Indians, hungry, thin, naked. Like their ancestors for centuries before them, these people had roamed the Amazon as a solitary band of nomads.
I said to my people, "I think there is another world, and I wanted us to come and see it."
Ataiba stared across the clearing at a group of light-skinned people. There, standing in a circle of prayer, the missionaries were waiting.
When I saw the first one come out from behind a tree, it was very profound to me, because I saw that there was a human being that was lost to civilization and lost to God. That's when I became a missionary, actually, a real missionary in my heart.
The missionaries stared back into the jungle, mindful that the arrows the Indians had shot at them before might come again. To persuade this last band of Yuki Indians to leave the jungle, the missionaries had brought with them other Indians who spoke Ataiba's language. They told him, "We once lived in the forest just like you, but life is better at the mission camp."
"We wanted to escape, but they said, 'Don't run away. We're your family.' We saw that they were our family, so we came closer."
At that moment, Ataiba remembers, he faced the biggest decision of his life. Earlier, he had quarreled with his brother, who didn't want to leave the forest and fled, taking his family deeper into the jungle. But Ataiba's band had been decimated in past months by disease. Many had been killed by a violent onslaught of settlers and loggers that had cut deep into traditional Yuki territory. And so on this Sunday morning, Chief Ataiba, exhausted and grieving his most recent losses, slowly led his people out of the forest toward the waiting missionaries.
"When we were young, I didn't know anything about the others. We were happy in the forest. Then they came to get the lumber. They killed a lot of our people. We left the jungle out of sadness."
Warily, Ataiba climbed into the mission plane. In his mind, he says, the plane was a winged spirit. It was the dead flying.
We're scared. We thought the blue sky was made out of water.
He wanted to fly with the door open, but the missionaries closed the door. The plane picked up speed. A taiba screamed, pounded its fists against the window, and they were in the air. A taiba looked down. The jungle receded. They were bound for his new home. Soon, a smooth cut in the jungle appeared, a long strip of green surrounded by a cluster of thatch huts and a big white house.
This is Bob and Mary Garland. We're here in central Bolivia, in the jungle, on a very beautiful river called the Chimoré River. We're evangelical missionaries with the responsibility of the spiritual oversight of the people here, the Yuki Indians.
In the Gospel of Mark, the last chapter, there's a challenge there and a command. It's go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And so that's why we're here.
Bob and Mary sip Kool-Aid in the living room of their white wood-framed house. Mary cuts the still air with a small straw fan. Bob mops his forehead with his red bandana. They recall how they came to be missionaries in the Bolivian jungle. In 1959, they were in Chicago. Bob was working in a blueprint shop and studying modern jazz. A year after they were married, he got cancer. When he came home to begin his recovery, a pastor who had paid him a visit in the hospital came by to check on him.
And I saw him coming, and he knocked on the door. Well, I told my wife, I said, "Good night, here's that pastor." I said, "Don't answer the door." So he knocked on the door several times, and we were quiet as mice hiding in there.
But the next week, they went out and bought a Bible. Bob says he's still not sure why, but somehow he was ready to hear the message. When the pastor came back, Bob and Mary invited him in. Within 3 days, they had become evangelical Christians.
We began to hear about tribal people hidden away in jungles that had never had an opportunity to hear this message. And here we figured, my goodness, we got radio, we got television, we got churches on almost every corner, and here there are people living out here in a bush. They've never even heard about Jesus.
So Bob and Mary joined the New Tribes Mission, a group of fundamentalists who believe the scriptures call them to translate the Bible for every tongue, tribe, and nation on earth. They spent 2 years at an evangelical training school in Wisconsin. Bob studied the art of contact with hostile tribes. Mary learned the science of breaking down an unknown language. Then they heard about one of the last uncontacted tribes in the world, the Yuki of the Bolivian Amazon.
3 weeks later, we were here in Bolivia, brother.
They bought a houseboat and floated down jungle rivers in search of a people who, according to the mission's magazine, Brown Gold, were lost in heathen darkness. The missionaries carved long trails into the jungle and waited.
It took us a year and a half to finally connect, but then we did make a friendly contact with them. I can't forget the day, of course, the 11th of March, 1965.
I was on the boat waiting for the news with another missionary wife. There were just two of us ladies. The men came back all excited, telling us that the Indians were out.
And they had bronze-looking bodies, you know, and they were whistling and motioning for us to come over. We had hung up a big fish and an alligator that morning, so it was still fresh. And, of course, that was kind of a, you know, peace offering. So they indicated for us to come out.
It was quite a meeting. I was not prepared for anything like that. I mean, you can see pictures, but to see these people in their natural habitat, realizing that they just have nothing else to live from but what they find in the jungle, it was really quite an impressive sight. Lois and I went back to the houseboat, and we made a bunch of cookies because we knew they liked sugar, and we wanted to please them.
In these first contacts, nothing was said of the Word of God. The idea was to make friends, and for Mary to begin to decipher the language.
The Yuki people, when we met them, they thought the whole world spoke their language. So they thought we were hard of hearing at first when we didn't respond so they would shout in our ears. They just did not know what to make of us. Well, being the jungle people and not knowing how to relate to outsiders, they were a bit rough. It was like a big gorilla trying to paw the zookeeper, if I can put it that way.
My name's Ataiba. Here I'm called Felix.
Ataiba sits on the steps of a little cottage near Bob and Mary's house, gazing out over the airstrip and listening to Christian music. It's been just over a year now since he left the jungle. After a generation of contact and pacification by the mission, almost every Yuki on Earth, except Ataiba's brother and his family, have settled at the new tribe's mission on the banks of the Chimoré.
I'm doing well here. I am content with my family and the missionaries.
Ataiba's long, muscular arms jut out from a ripped T-shirt. His raggedy pants are held up by a vine from the jungle. He likes to come sit on this porch in the afternoons to talk to the missionaries. Sometimes they give him a piece of candy. He says he likes to come here to think about how that loud machine can make all the grass go away, about why so many of the young people run around kicking a ball, wearing themselves out, about his brother, still out in the forest, living the old Yuki way.
They had a rather hopeless belief system when you get right down to it. It wasn't anything to inspire much joy. The luck on the hunt was determined by spirits. The wind, that was caused by the spirits too. They were afraid of everything.
There are two forces at work, God and the devil. And I realize a lot of people poo-poo this, but people have a choice to make. They'll either want to follow Jesus or they're going to follow the devil.
My life is changing from the way it was in the forest. I want to hear the word of God. I want to be a believer. If I die and I am a believer, I will go to heaven. But if I am not a believer, I will go to the lake of fire. I don't want to suffer in the lake of fire.
For centuries, the Yuki religious world consisted of menacing spirits living in the wind, the birds, and the shadows of the forest. But the Yuki roaming the jungle had no real spiritual leaders, no shamans to help make peace with those spirits or to tap the jungle for its natural medicines, no one to pass on the stories from one Yuki generation to the next. There just wasn't time for that. All that mattered was the hunger in their stomachs that drove them on a constant search for food.
Out there, in my forest, there are lots of birds and alligators, many kinds of animals.
Barefoot, carrying their 8-foot bows, Ataiba and his son, Oscar, glide through the forest. In his old life, Ataiba almost never stayed in one place for more than a single night. As they moved, the Yukis carried with them hot coals wrapped in leaves, for the people had lost the art of making fire. The closest thing to a home was a string hammock, and when it rained, some palm fronds draped over sticks. Now, at the mission camp, the Yuki live in huts, and some are becoming farmers. But like many Yuki, Ataiba still searches the forest for meat.
I'm cutting a trail. Please carry my bow for me.
Ataiba and Oscar move down a path so narrow only they can see it. Swarms of mosquitoes are reflected in the filtered sunlight. They move for hours, always scanning, reading the forest for signs of prey, a faint print in the earth, a tiny piece of fruit half eaten. Suddenly, at the base of a large tree, they find the den of the Hochi, a small spotted pig.
Hochi.
Oscar crouches toward the back entrance and begins to stuff leaves into the hole with his bow. A taiba creeps toward the den and lies atop the front entrance. His hands are poised in front of the hole, ready to pounce as the animal is forced out from the back. As the Hochi rushes out of the hole, a taiba's hands clamp down around its neck. The animal struggles for breath, but a taiba doesn't let go. Later that night, Bob Garland stands at the front of the one-room mission school. He speaks of Papagwatsu, God the Great Father. Light from a full moon pours in through the screened window behind him, making his long white sideburns look silver. Three dozen Yuki look up in silence. In the back of the room, a taiba, his belly full of Hochi meat, watches Bob, transfixed. Then Bob sits down and turns on a slide machine and tape player powered by a car battery.
Are you okay, Papa Guatsu? Hoswehe, ate piaha, helicorete, yere yerei.
His own voice, the words carefully translated by Mary into the Yuki language, comes out of the box on the table, and colored images suddenly appear on a white sheet hung on the chalkboard. On the screen appear Roman soldiers with red beards and golden helmets. Bob tells a story 2,000 years old of the exodus of the Jews, of temples and prophets in Babylonia. A taiba stares at the ancient warriors. Bob and Mary gave the Yukis their Christian names. They appointed the first person who converted to Christianity as mayor. They introduced the idea of work for pay and opened a little store where many Yuki buy the bullets, kerosene, batteries, and sugar they now find essential. The missionaries have taught the Yuki almost everything they know about the world outside their jungle.
Our people have started from zero. We've had to be the doctor, the lawyer, the Indian chief, the policeman, you know, and the preacher. And I mean, so we've had to enter into almost every aspect of their lives. Good night, we've had to get involved, teach them how to do sewing. And of course, after 20, almost 26 years of all that kind of help, how could we not feel like we're kind of their daddy and mommy?
At the Thursday night believers meeting in the mission's open-air chapel, Bob and Mary lead a small group of Yuki in song. Some people compare life for the Yukis now to a kind of golden cage. They are safe from the violence that threatened them, yet dependent on the missionaries who've defined their new world for them. But other ideas are beginning to trickle into the village from government and foreign development workers, and some Yuki, from a generation born and educated at the mission camp, are starting to question the moral order established by Bob and Mary. And the Garland's dream of an entire community converted hasn't come to pass. After a generation of evangelizing, say Bob and Mary, the 12 people sitting in these wooden pews are the only true believers among the Yuki. Though almost all the Yuki say they are Christians, for many, the new teachings are mingled with the old beliefs from the forest. In his hut, a taiba rocks back and forth in a hammock, gazing at a bed of coals on the dirt floor. He says he had a dream about his brother the other night. He came out of the woods and approached the mission camp. Atiba called to him, but his brother fled back into the forest, to the old way of life.
When the winds came strong, we used to sing like this to keep the spirits away. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to see the dead. I don't think about the spirits anymore. I am only thinking about the Word of God. When I hear the wind now, I think that God has made the wind. It is only wind, nothing more.
Atiba leans forward, looking around nervously. Then he smiles. His green eyes shine and fix on a point beyond the camp, somewhere out in the forest. He says, it's hard to forget all the things we knew before.
I don't want to sing against those spirits, but yes, sometimes I still do. At times, I do cry out against the winds.
A postscript. After searching for more than a year, the missionaries finally found Atiba's brother with his pregnant wife and five children. The missionaries brought them out of the forest to live with Atiba at the new tribe's mission camp. Now, there are no more Yuki in the jungle. With Nancy Postero, this is Sandy Tolan reporting.